Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation with Emil Frankel, Assistant Secretary for Transportation Policy at the U.S. Department of Transportation. And joining us in our conversation is Dave Abel. Well, Emil, one of the highest priorities of the department is the Surface Transportation Reauthorization Bill. Could you give us the history of this bill and why it's needed?
Well, the current authorization bill, and this is the legislation which authorizes all of the virtually all of the surface transportation programs, grant programs, highways, transit, safety, federal motor carrier safety, the bill which contains or is the current authorization expires September 30th, so in about 6 weeks. So it was necessary, is necessary, for Congress to adopt reauthorizing legislation prior to the beginning of the next fiscal year. Whether we'll get to that is another question. But nonetheless, that's what prompts this. I might say this is an extraordinary year, 2003, which may continue into 2004. But the current authorizing legislation known as T21, the Transportation Equity Act for the 21st Century, which was finally adopted by Congress, I think, in early 1998, as I mentioned, expires September 30. The authorizing legislation for the aviation and aviation grant programs, AIR 21, expires September 30. And Amtrak, Intercity Passenger Rail, has been operating without an authorization. Its authorization expired September 30 of last year. So as a good friend of mine has mentioned, this is a trifecta dealing virtually with all of the programs of the department and most of our budget, virtually all of our budget. Specifically with regard to T21 or the surface transportation programs, we have been involved in drafting a proposal by the administration for the successor bill since early 2002, really so now 18, 19, 20 months. Frankly, we would have started sooner had it not been for – we would have started almost at the beginning of this administration had it not been, of course, for the events of September 11th. And the secretary, the deputy secretary, the top leadership of the department were so focused on security, aviation security issues. But we got to this and we created a process of reaching out to stakeholders involving hundreds of people within the department itself in developing legislation, the administration's proposal, which was, in fact, introduced in May, I think, of this year. And Congress had been holding hearings on this for some period of time. So Congress is now grappling with reauthorization. And the administration's proposal is known as SAFETY, the Safe, Accountable, Flexible, and Efficient Transportation Equity Act of 2003. SAFETY is our proposal to succeed T21.
It certainly is easier to say that way than to than to pronounce the entire name of the bill each time. Let's dive a little bit into the detail of the reforms in the bill. Can you give us some highlights of the programmatic reforms that the bill contains?
It is a reform bill, but it also builds on its predecessors, plural. There was revolutionary legislation adopted, as you well know, in 1991, ICE-T, the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act, in which I might say the current secretary, then a congressman from San Jose and very senior on T&I, Norman Mineta, was a principal author of that, along with Senator Moynihan, Senator Chafee of Rhode Island, and others. And this was really quite revolutionary legislation. It really proposed significant programmatic and adopted very significant programmatic reforms in surface transportation programs. Then T21, which was adopted eventually, actually there was some lapse between ICE-T and T21, but it was eventually adopted in early 1998. These are generally six-year authorization bills. Had significant fiscal reforms or financial reforms in creating instruments essentially designed to make sure that the money raised from the transportation system, motor fuels taxes, gasoline taxes, would be reinvested in the transportation system and would be done so as promptly as we could determine what those proceeds or revenues were. So when we developed SAFETY, we tried to build, preserve on, strengthen, and build on those reforms and those significant features of those two predecessor bills. On the other hand, as the title indicates, we have a very strong emphasis on safety in this bill, highway safety. As the Secretary and others have pointed out, and the Administrator of National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, while we've made dramatic reductions in the rate of fatalities on our highways, the numbers are still unacceptable and actually growing. About 43,000 people lose their lives on our highways every year. Think about that if it were an epidemic of some sort. Think about that if 43,000 Americans died as a result of terrorist attacks on an annual basis. We do something about it. So we propose to do something about it in this bill, and we have proposing consolidation and performance bonuses for states, building on states' discretion and states' flexibility in how they achieve results, but basically rewarding them if they do achieve results. We try that principle of flexibility, discretion on the parts of states or transit agencies, regional authorities, but holding them and rewarding them for performance achievements runs through this bill in many specific ways. But I think that those themes and the emphasis on safety, getting states to adopt primary seatbelt laws or to make improvements in seatbelt use, reduction of driving under the influence, and rewarding states, those are, I think, principal emphases of this, of the administration's proposal. And we hope will be provisions contained in the final enactment.
In the bill itself, there are some significant areas that are built upon the authorization that's currently in place. How much will the legislation cost, and how is it paid for? What are some of the ways that the work will be funded?
Well, that's a major source of contention. That's frankly probably the primary reason the reauthorization legislation hasn't been adopted, even though we're only 6 or 7 weeks away from the expiration of T21. The administration's proposal is a almost $250 billion program over 6 years, which is the largest program ever proposed, largest amount of funding ever proposed for these surface transportation programs. But there's quite a gap. I mean, the bipartisan leadership of the key jurisdictional committee in the House, the Committee on Transportation Infrastructure, is talking about a $375 billion 6-year program. Some of the committee leadership in the Senate is talking about a $310 or $311 billion program. So those are wide gaps. But our program is very, very significant. Builds, as I said, on record funding in T21, but we are proposing to do it principally by existing revenue sources. The president has made it clear he does not favor an increase in the gasoline tax, so we are projecting growth in the gasoline tax as well as some augmentation, transfer of a tax currently imposed on ethanol or gasohol from the general fund to the highway trust fund as the primary sources, so that there would be growth of 15% to 20% safety over T21, but T21 grew at a rate of about 40% plus over the prior legislation.
You mentioned earlier that the legislation builds upon state and local flexibility in executing transportation policy. Why is building on that flexibility important for transportation policy?
Transportation, and one of the things that makes it so interesting, is the most mundane, personal, and local of issues, and also the most global and international of issues. You think about, and that's one of the things I think that engages people's interest. You think about conversations around the coffee machine and, gee, how'd you get to work today? How long did it take you to get to work today? And people complaining about traffic jams and so forth. On the other hand, how and where transportation investments are made really determines the growth of our economy, where communities are situated, how they grow. It deals with international trade issues, movement of goods. So it has this broad impact that we're dealing with, and we have to be sensitive to both those issues. And I think the decision makers and the owners and operators of the system, as I mentioned, are, after all, are, you know, the Connecticut Department of Transportation or the Los Angeles County Metropolitan Transit Authority. They're the owners and operators of the system, and the decision about where and how investments should be made really should be made at the local level. The secretary, who, as you know, was mayor of San Jose before he became Congressman Mineta, talks about decisions his frustration about decisions being made, in his case, often by, if not the federal government, the California Department of Transportation, which affected issues in San Jose. And one of the things he set out to do in ICE-T was to make sure that there was greater discretion and engagement on the part of local officials in where that highway was going to go and what that bridge was going to look like and what the level of transit services would be. So the state and local people or the regional people are the ones who are engaging the customers. So they need to have broad discretion. But they also need to be held to performance and accountability, because they oftentimes are using 80% federal funds for projects. And they need to be accountable, and they need to be sensitive to national goals, national considerations, our ability to move goods and freight across the country, for example.
How does one manage the development of an integrated policy? We'll ask Emil Frankel of the U.S. Department of Transportation to tell us how this is done when the Business of Government Hour returns.